You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
If you grew up in the New York area during the 1950s, 60s, and 70s and had even a passing interest in sports, the voice of Marty Glickman is probably embedded into your consciousness. He seemed to be everywhere, broadcasting Knicks and Giants games, also horse racing, high school athletics, baseball, later the Jets games, and even marble tournaments. Marty Glickman was also a celebrated athlete when he was young and was one of two Jewish members of the U.S. track team sent to the 1936 Berlin Olympics. They were denied a chance to compete out of concerns that it might upset Adolf Hitler. Mr. Glickman, who died in 2001, is the subject of a new documentary that premieres tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO, a station that was also part of his incredible story. It was written and directed by James Friedman and features some of the most famous sportscasters to have followed in Marty Glickman's footsteps, and also some of the leading athletes of his day, like former Senator and Basketball Hall of Famer Bill Bradley, who was a member of the New York Knicks championship teams of 1970 and 73. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of you to our show today. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Thank you for having me on, Leonard.
James, one of the great qualities that Marty Glickman possessed was a generosity of spirit. He served as a mentor to so many young people. Is that how you first met him?
Yes, I was 17, and I used to drive into Manhattan and watch my brother produce his late-night talk show on WNEW, which was one of the first all-sports talk shows in the nation. One day, I'm sitting in the booth, and my brother tells Marty he's been called up to the Army Reserves, and Marty will need to find another producer. And this is so typical of Marty Glickman. Without missing a beat, he pointed directly into the booth at me and said Jimmy could do it. I literally turned around to see if there was another guy named Jimmy sitting there.
How old were you?
There wasn't. There wasn't. For the rest of that year, I produced his show. He taught me how to get the scores off the wires, write them up, schedule commercials. Pretty heady stuff for a 17-year-old. I've been telling that story this week, and people say, were you intimidated by working for Marty Glickman? And I said, absolutely not, because he never treated me as a high school kid. He treated me as his producer, and it gave me a professional confidence I have to this very day. This man had an incredible generosity of spirit.
The list of people you interview in the film is rather eclectic. I can't think of another film that has Jim Brown, the great football player, comedian Jerry Stiller, and Bill Bradley. What does that reveal about Glickman's personality?
Tremendous, because you have to remember, and Bill, you can confirm this, you know, this is my first film. I wasn't anybody to these people when I called them up. And, you know, when I said I want to do a documentary on Marty Glickman, the response was unanimously, where do you want me and when? And Bill was very gracious with his time. How are you, Bill? I haven't spoken to you in a while.
Great.
Now, Bill, Marty Glickman began announcing basketball in the early 1950s when it was still somewhat of a fringe sport. When do you remember first hearing him?
I don't think basketball was ever a fringe sport. But I understand what you mean. I first heard of Marty Glickman when I was about 14 years old, and I grew up in Missouri, and I went to a basketball camp given by Easy Ed McCauley, a former Celtic and St. Louis Hawk. And he would play the highlights of the year, which was a film somebody did, and Marty would be the announcer for the highlights of the year. And he brought it all to life for a little kid in Missouri.
Did he broadcast any of the Princeton games when you were there?
No, he didn't broadcast any Princeton games, and by the time I got there, he was no longer broadcasting Knick games. He'd passed the baton to Marv Albert. But he became synonymous with basketball and with announcing. I think Marv Albert would tell you that he patterned himself right after Marty Glickman, everything from the pauses to the tone to the speed.
And Larry King describes Marty Glickman as television on the radio. That's because he developed so much of the basic broadcast language we associate with the sport?
Well, he certainly did. He had one great Needix, which was a little fast food place in the Garden and a few other places in New York at the time that Marty was broadcasting. He'd get a commercial in during the broadcast where he'd say, it's two for Needix.
Good like Needix, he'd say.
There's a Bill, you're in a little piece of that in the film that people love. It's a whole little good like Needix moment.
Okay.
And for people to understand, I mean, Bill also explains this in the film. You know, he had Glickman words, is what you said. He literally defined the NBA dictionary, coining terms such as the key, the lane, the midcourt stripe, and his most famous swish. But more importantly, he gave a geography to the court. So this sounds unbelievable to hear this, but prior to Marty Glickman, this is what a radio broadcast sounded like. Bradley passes to Friedman, Friedman scores. You didn't know where we were on the court, but Marty would explain it. Bradley dribbles up along the right sideline, throws a bounce pass to the top of the circle to Friedman, who banks in a two-handed set shot. At least back then, two-handed set shots. Right?
This is your fantasy basketball game.
Yeah, Mike Breen had a great line about him. He said his voice was attached to the ball.
Now, was that the way basketball players talked, Bill? Were those phrases, other than swish, top of the key, the lane, baseline, et cetera, were they the way that you might have talked when you were at a team meeting?
Well, I didn't even know that Marty Glickman invented those words. They were, from my perspective, just descriptions of what a court was, top of the key. Swish, of course, is one of the great sounds of America, one of the great sounds in the world. If you're a player, you know, and I would practice a lot of hours alone in a gym. And so you'd stop and shoot, and you'd wait to hear that swish. And he caught the exact sound with the word.
Well, he had been a high school athlete, a star in the Bronx and at Syracuse football. Also had a brief career in pro football and in basketball. And as we will hear, he was a great track star. How often do athletes excel in so many sports?
Well, I think these days very few. You have to concentrate so early. But I think that even in those days, it wasn't usual that you would have a multi-sport person at the very top of all sports.
And James, football in those days, you played both on the offense and the defense.
Yes, he punted, he tackled, he threw passes, he ran, you did it all. He said it was a lot more fun.
My guests are James Friedman and Bill Bradley. We're talking about a film called Glickman, written, produced, and directed by James Friedman. And Martin Scorsese is the executive producer. It's going to be shown on HBO tonight. HBO is also part of Marty Glickman's story. Wasn't he the first broadcaster ever on HBO?
He was not only the first broadcaster on HBO, I believe, doing a Rangers game, but Marty literally created the HBO started mostly as an all-sports network, starting out, emanating with programming out of Madison Square Garden. So Marty really set the template for most of what HBO Sports has become, and did a very groundbreaking had a very groundbreaking idea as a sports executive. He was the first person to say, at the time, tennis events and golf tournaments, and specifically for HBO, this would be Wimbledon, they only showed, NBC would show the weekend coverage. They didn't show anything during the week. And I know your listeners probably, that's inconceivable to them today. Marty said, why don't we at HBO become the first midweek broadcaster of Wimbledon tennis? And Ross Greenberg, the former head of HBO Sports, said, this had never happened before, and he literally changed the landscape in sports and television as we know it today.
They didn't show every basketball game either. I think the Knicks were on twice a week. The rest of the time you had to listen to them on the radio.
Yes, radio was so much more important back then. When Marty did giant home games, they were blacked out in New York, so the only way to experience a New York football Giants game was through Marty.
Now, how did his experience at the Berlin Olympics in 1936 shape him as a broadcaster?
Shape him as a broadcaster? You know, no one's ever asked that question before. I think his experience, Marty had great feeling for what he did and the joy of sport. he never let that get him down. And in fact, Bill, I'm curious, did Marty ever talk to you about what happened to him in Berlin?
Well, the reason I asked is you get the feeling that he was a lifelong advocate of sports as a vehicle to transcend divisions of race, class, and religion. And near the end of the documentary, he talks very movingly about a very brief experience he had with a Japanese sprinter by the name of Suzuki. So I think he also saw his own experience as a victim of anti-Semitism as an object lesson for him as a broadcaster.
Yes, he never wanted anyone to suffer what he suffered, where he was not given the chance to run due to prejudice. And, you know, Marty represented the purity of sport, the joy of sport. It's almost primal, like when you have a catch with your son, you know, that feeling emanated out of Marty Glickman's broadcasts. And he was not a fan of the commercialization of sports and obviously, you know, what happened to him at the Olympics. He wanted to make sure that never happened to anyone else.
Now, Bill, you represented the United States at the Olympics, but in a very different environment, a very different atmosphere.
Certainly, yes. The Olympics I was in Tokyo back in the Paleolithic era, 1964. And it was totally open. And I think that Marty's experience at the Olympics, revolting as it is, had the effect of revealing Avery Brundage and the Olympic movement at that time as being not only paper tigers, but deeply prejudiced people, paper tigers.
I've seen a documentary about Jesse Owens in which it's revealed that Avery Brundage played a major role in sabotaging Jesse Owens' career after the Olympics, despite the fact that he had been the hero of those 36 Olympics.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. But the main thing about Marty, he was never bitter about this. In other words, he had a personality and a love of sport that was big enough that this was obviously a painful moment for him, an embarrassing moment for the U.S. Olympic team, and a terrible moment for the Olympic movement. But Marty didn't dwell on that. He went forward, and as he went forward, he made more connections and brought more fulfillment to people's lives.
But James, Berlin wasn't the last time Marty Glickman would experience anti-Semitism of some sort. After he helped to broker the NBA's first television deal, he was let go, replaced by announcers whom the network executive said sounded less New York.
Yes, which some people claim is a euphemism for too Jewish. But, you know, to have your listeners understand the times, not looking at it from 2013, but back then in the early mid-50s, you know, everybody was presenting a Midwestern view, all-American, you know, person to the public. All the movie stars, you know, Dean Martin was Dino Crosetti. Everybody was changing their names. But Marty Glickman did not change his name. He was very proud of being Jewish. And he said he could not, he couldn't handle being on the air as like Marty Manning and having his father hear that. He would never want that. And they did replace him with Lindsay Nelson, and it was a blow to his potential national recognition of Marty Glickman that he never really got, and was a little bit hurt by that. And one of the reasons I made this film was to share his story so even posthumously Marty could get some of that national recognition he so richly deserved.
And as I've said any number of times, Marty has grown in people's awareness over the years, and this great film is just an example of that. There are not too many broadcasters who have films made about them. I can't recall many, but Marty did, and he did not only because he was a great athlete and a path-breaking announcer, but because he was a person of real character.
Now, Marty Glickman was a guest on our show in 1991, a while back. A great storyteller. He told some of the funniest stories I've ever heard on our show. He also always had stories about his experiences as a broadcaster that were quite colorful. We're going to be posting our old show later today. It's not available right now. We have to go deep into the archives to find it. But it was one of my great thrills to talk to him at that time.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
He tells a wonderful story about broadcasting the World Series with Red Barber. He's a kid. Red Barber, of course, is the old pro. And he says to Red, who do you think is going to win? And Red says, that's why they play these games, Marty. And he said that was a lesson for the rest of his life.
And so there we are. You remembered that from how many years ago?
Oh, I've told that story a million times since. Anytime anybody asks me who's going to win this election, I go back to my Marty Glickman story.
That's great.
Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank
Good luck
you
with
for
the film.
Doing this.
And
thank you for making the film.
Yeah, thank you, James.
You're very welcome. It'll be on tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO. And also, people who want to learn more about Marty can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Glickman the Film, and my website, glickmanthefilm.com. You'll see clips of the film. You'll see pictures of Marty and stories. I'm very proud that I got the opportunity to share this man's story. It's a real honor for me.
Just one more question. How did Martin Scorsese, the executive producer, become involved in this project?
Marty, who knows absolutely nothing about sports. Bill, you may have been the only person in the film he even recognized. But my film played the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and Ari Emanuel, the head of William Morris Endeavor, read about it and asked to see it. 1 week later, I was sitting in his office, and he said, you know who should see this film? Martin Scorsese. And literally 2 days later, I received an email from Marty saying he loved the film and wanted to release it through his company on HBO. So, in other words, a typical Tuesday in my life.
And it is being broadcast tonight at 9 p.m. And, of course, as is typical with HBO, you'll be able to see it again and again, and it'll be on demand as well. So you'll have plenty of opportunity to see it, unless Time Warner has a big fight with HBO in the near future.
No, please don't say that.
James Friedman, Bill Bradley, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leonard.